You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Senior Director of Charts at Billboard.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Executive Digital Director, West Coast.
How's it going, Katie?
Not bad. How about yourself?
I am all right. As people can tell, you may have been a little bit under the weather for the past two shows.
My rasp has improved.
It's not quite at the level of Bonnie Tyler, Kim Carnes. More of where would we put this in the pop canon of raspy singers?
How about Taylor Dane?
Okay, sure. I like that. I like that. Next week, maybe we can hit someone sort of from the new millennium.
What about? No. All my references are old because the next one I was thinking of was Alana Tyler. Is that her name from
Alana Miles?
Black Velvet.
Alana Miles.
There you go. Next reference.
Oh, boy. We're aged. Okay. Well, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news on how the Billboard charts are brought to you by Taylor Swift this week, as the megastar absolutely dominates both the Billboard 200 Albums chart and the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart. Her Midnights album scores the biggest week for any album in nearly 7 years and, of course, debuts at number one on the chart, while she holds down the entire top 10 songs on the Hot 100 chart, the first time any act has ever done that, led by Antihero at number one.
Also on the show, Rihanna is back.
Yay!
The pop superstar returned last week with Lift Me Up from the soundtrack of Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. We'll talk about the new ballad and what it could mean for her upcoming Super Bowl halftime show and any maybe music beyond that, so stick around. But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay, let's do the chart chat. And it's effectively an all Taylor Swift edition of the chart chat.
Just how I like it.
Spoken like a true Swiftie. Okay, well, first up, let's start with the Billboard 200 Albums chart. As Swift's new studio album, Midnights, debuts at number one with 1.578 million equivalent album units earned in the U.S. in the week ending October 27th, of course, according to Luminate. It is her 11th number one album. There are so many things to say about this album's debut, as well as all of the songs that came from it that are debuting on the charts.
I mean, just that number alone, Keith. 1.578 million. That's just, as you said, biggest in 7 years. We have not seen that number or anything close to it in a long time.
No, we haven't. It is spectacular. It is astounding. It is astonishing. It is enormous.
Yes.
It's all of those things.
Can't overstate it.
Yeah, you just can't. As much as I have gotten used to seeing these numbers for Taylor, in the past week, as I've been writing about this, when I first saw the initial numbers from the album's first day, so that was the Saturday after it was released on Friday, so on the 22nd, I assumed the numbers were going to be big, But when I saw just how big they were initially, I was caught off guard. Like,
yeah,
I just wasn't, I guess because part of me thought like, I don't know, Adele was big, but she wasn't, you know, a million plus. And mm-hmm. even though I knew Taylor had all these things in play to kind of help motivate streams and sales, you know, the many different things to collect and, you know, blah, 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 I still thought, maybe that won't really move the needle. Well, it all moved the needle.
So the needle got moved.
The needle got moved. all right. So let's go over some of the astounding chart statistics and factoids that I have.
Yes.
This is just a mere sampling. If you want the full buffet, go to billboard.com/chart-beat. And I'm sure by the time you go there, there will be at least seven different stories about Taylor Swift. So first, with an 11th number one album on the Billboard 200, Swift ties Barbara Streisand for the most number one albums among women. Midnights has the biggest week for any album since Adele's 25 debuted with 3.482 million back in December of 2015.
That number seems even crazier now, but yes.
Yeah, okay. That number will probably never, ever happen again. But who knows? Probably anything not. Is possible.
Probably not. Yeah.
Midnights sold 1.140 million copies in traditional album sales. So just to back up a little bit, when we talk about equivalent album units, that number that I mentioned earlier, the 1.578 million, that is a number that includes traditional album sales, streaming equivalent album units, where we take the number of streams generated by the songs on an album and divide it by a number to kind of weigh it down to what we consider an album unit. And then also track equivalent album units. We take the number of tracks sold in an album, divided by 10, and that equals one album unit, one TEA unit. Very complicated. But the point is, of that 1.5 million number, 1.140 million were in traditional album sales, plain old CDs, vinyl albums, cassettes, and digital albums like you'd buy on iTunes.
Yeah, and we always talk about moving units versus selling. She sold a million. We can just say she sold a million.
Yes, there are many people, probably for just ease and convenience, there are many people, especially on social media, that talk about how, you know, whenever something is at number one on the Billboard 200, they will say, oh, it's sold this many units. Like, no, yeah. My brain hasn't done that bit of aerobics to kind of get to that point, because there are free streams that are factored into, you know, the Billboard 200 each week. Like, right. You can go listen to something for free on YouTube or Spotify, and that activity counts in the Billboard 200. So, also, you didn't sell that unit of streaming in any way. I'm falling into a rabbit hole. We're stopping. The point is,
but guess what? Taylor sold a million albums.
Thank you. 1.140 million copies sold. That is the biggest single sales week for an album since Swift's own Reputation came out, when it sold 1.216 million in 2017. Midnights is the first album to sell a million copies or more since in a single week since Reputation in 2017.
Yeah. And if you read Keith's article, kind of looking at Taylor Swift's last 5 years of album releases, Reputation wasn't even on streaming when it came out. So it was like the only way you could get it was through through traditional album sales a lot of the time.
Right.
So that was a different era. And she still sold more than a million copies of this album.
Midnights is the 22nd album in the modern era, meaning since Luminate began tracking music sales in 1991. It's the 22nd album to sell at least a million copies in a single week. There have actually been 24 instances of million plus sales weeks. And the reason why there's 22 albums and 24 instances is because three of those weeks were all generated by the same album. Adele's 25 sold at least a million in three separate weeks.
Three times over.
Also, kind of shockingly, five of those 22 albums are by Taylor Swift. And no artist except for Taylor has had three or more million selling albums in a single week. You'd have to go to Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, and Eminem. Those are the only other acts with two albums that did a million plus in a single week. So that's just a few things. Here's a few more. Midnights collected 20 songs. So that's the 13 standard tracks plus the 7 tracks on the deluxe edition. Had 549.26 million on-demand official streams in its first week in the U.S. That is the third largest streaming week of any album ever. Mm-hmm. The biggest for any album by a woman and the biggest for any non-R&B hip-hop album, because the numbers 1 and 2 biggest streaming weeks belong to albums from Drake. Scorpion has the most with 745.92 million in its first week. And then Certified Lover Boy has the second most with 743.67 million.
Can I make a quick non-Midnights point?
Yeah.
Drake and 21 Savage were supposed to put out a joint album this past Friday.
That's right.
Drake posted on Instagram that his longtime producer, 40, had come down with COVID while he was mixing and mastering the album. So it's coming out this Friday instead, the 4th, November 4th.
Do we believe that?
No. I think I'm allowed to say that. Keith, you can go over there and plead the 5th. But I think the combination of second week Taylor and, as we'll talk about later in the show, new Rihanna, I think scared off Drake from trying to wade into that mess, because I feel like the albums chart and Hot 100 are pretty well spoken for next week. Now, Drake and 21 Savage could have thrown a wrench into that. Drake, like, historically debuts at number one on the Hot 100 when he puts something out, debuts at number one when he puts something out on the Billboard 200. But I think this week might have terrified him a little bit, with good reason. That's all I have to say.
Enough to fib about someone having COVID?
That's the thing. I think 40 had COVID.
Okay.
I just don't know that actually, and maybe the album was already, like, maybe they were pushing it to release it, and maybe they just wanted to get out of that deadline period, not just about the charts, not just about that. I 100% think 40 had COVID. I don't think you make up a COVID story, but I wonder if they placed the blame on that instead of just saying, we're just going to step aside and we'll be, you know, meet us in a week.
I mean,
I don't know.
When Taylor moved the release of Red Taylor's version, she never said
for
why.
For Adele's 30.
She
quietly moved
it. Yeah, Taylor never said it was because she was getting out of the way of Adele, but that's what it was.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, is Drake trying to get out of the way of Taylor's second week? We don't know.
We don't know.
But,
and also maybe a slightly gentlemanly thing. He's obviously longtime friends and collaborators with Rihanna. And that song didn't get announced officially until Tuesday, Wednesday last week.
What, you think Drake and Rihanna don't talk?
Well, I mean, they might not talk about release weeks, you know, like they might not talk about work. I just said work. They had a number one song called Work. I feel like it was too much going on this week and he moved aside personally. Okay. But again, we don't have any inside information to that point. I'm just speculating.
Yeah. No, it's fun to speculate because, I mean.
Well, we're talking about the biggest artists in the world, too. We're talking about Drake, Rihanna, Taylor. If you're talking about, you know, a Mount Rushmore of pop in the last 10, 15 years, those three are on it.
Yeah.
So all of them colliding at once with music is a lot.
It is. Well, speaking of songs like Work going to number one on the Hot 100 and Rihanna's new track, let's move on to the Hot 100.
Yes.
So all 20 of the tracks from Midnights, we're still talking about Taylor, are on the Hot 100 this week. They all debut on the Hot 100, and she has the entire top 10.
Just to clarify, all 20, meaning Midnights and the 3 a.m. edition that came out 3 hours later, sort of EP style.
Yes. Well, I mean, she put out a deluxe edition of the album that had all 20 songs on it.
Right.
She didn't put out a separate 7-song album.
You're right. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Though a lot of people clearly, because we could tell by the track sales, a lot of people clearly had bought the original standard 13-song album and then went and just cherry picked the 7 additional tracks and bought those a la
carte.
Right,
right.
Instead of buying the whole full album again, because it would have been more costly to do that. So Antihero, the album's first single and first video, debuts at number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100. And like I said, she has the entire top 10. No artist has ever done that. And this is also the third time that the entire top 5 has been one artist. So the Beatles did it first in 1964, then Drake, then Taylor. I pointed out to Gary that it might be Gary Trust, who manages the Hot 100. I pointed out to Gary that it might be beneficial if we had a story on Billboard.com that explains, you know, why is it that no one ever had the entire top 10 until 2022? You know, why was this never possible? Because we've had obviously enormous superstars in the past with tons and tons of hit songs. Why did this never happen in the past? Because I think the average person wouldn't know. I mean, the short answer, because I'm sure there's got to be people listening that are wondering, like, yeah, why did Taylor do it now? Like, why did no one else do it? The sort of most abbreviated version of this is, for a very long time, the Billboard Hot 100 only allowed songs on it that were commercially available as physical singles. So from 1958, when the chart started, up through 1998, the end of 1998, you had to have released a vinyl single or a cassette single or a CD single or a physical tangible single that you would go to a store and purchase. That is the only way to get onto the chart. Lots of songs were never released as singles. And, you know, oftentimes if you were a musician or an artist, signed to a major record label, you usually wouldn't have more than one or two or three singles in the market at any one time. And most likely some of those singles would eventually sell out and, you know, move on, and you would move on to the next thing that you're promoting, blah, blah, blah. After 1998, we allowed songs that were not physically available to chart. We consider those airplay only at the time, because the only way you could really listen to them was on the radio. This is before streaming and before digital. And eventually, we just allowed anything that was available on digital retail, on streamers, whatever. So as you go farther and farther into the future, more and more songs by any one artist can be on the chart at one time, especially if you drop a really popular album on digital retail or streaming services. In theory, all of them could show up at the same time in the chart, just like Taylor did. So the Beatles had a unique set of circumstances that enabled them to have the entire top five. In 1964, the Beatles, they were breaking in America. But before they kind of really broke America, they had basically licensing deals for a couple of their songs with kind of small record labels in America before they properly signed their Capitol Records deal. So in that top five, there's a couple songs that are on random labels that are not Capitol. And then I think two or three of them are on Capitol Records. So they wouldn't have been able to have had the entire top five had they not had songs on these other random records. And, you know, had they been on maybe one just record label at the time, you know, they wouldn't have necessarily had the entire top five. But it does show that there was a, fervent fan base that wanted to go purchase anything that had the Beatles on it, much in the same way where, you know, today on streaming services, you know, you can have someone like Taylor Swift or Drake or whoever it is drop an album, and everyone rushes to Apple or Spotify or whatever streaming services they use and play all those songs because they want to hear all of them, much in the same way where had the Beatles had 20 different singles in the marketplace in 1964, maybe they would have had the entire top 20. I don't know.
Yeah. And that was the other point I was going to make beyond the Beatles, was that being able to see the popularity of individual tracks on an album because of streaming and because of digital sales is also a whole new frontier. Like, we brought up Drake's Honestly Nevermind. You know, Jimmy Cook's debuted at number 1 on the Hot 100. That wasn't something that Drake like pushed as a single, but that was clearly the one that resonated with the most fans and became the number 1. So it's a very kind of cool democratic way of doing things that isn't just about who chooses, you know, what the artist chooses as the lead single, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there also is something to be said. I mean, well, there's a couple things here. One, Jimmy Cook's was the track with 21 Savage. That was a very overtly rap track.
Yeah.
Which in an album that
on
was
a dancey project.
like a dancey left of center house album. Mm-hmm. That was clearly what Drake fans resonated with. And they're like, yeah, we're going to play this one. Thanks. Yep. and that is also the track for the video. They just dropped an official music video for that.
That
and
is that how is sort they of announced effectively, the joint album. Yes.
Right. The joint album with 21 Savage. Mm-hmm. I also like their, though it's nice when fans can help drive kind of like, oh, this is going to be the song that is going to be kind of earmarked as the thing that we work officially as a single or make a video for. I think that's great sometimes, but I also think it's nice when someone like Taylor Swift says, I want Antihero to be the lead single. It's the one I'm going to make a video for first.
I'm convinced whether she would have chosen it or not, it would have been the one that, you know.
Because it's the first song on the album?
Well, it's also just like, it's not the first song on the album, but it's not Lavender Hazes, but it's also just like already become a meme. I mean, everybody and their mom is using it on TikTok as like, I'm the problem, like as a meme. Right. And so it's like, I think Taylor being Taylor knew that that was going to be the one that spread far and wide for a multitude of reasons. And so, yeah, obviously it was an effective lead single.
Well, for the full rundown of everything.
All that.
Go to billboard.com/charts, click on Hot 100, click on Billboard 200. You can see all that there. And then, of course, go to billboard.com/chart-beat. Read all the stories about all this stuff. And Katie's raising her hand.
I've got a question, Keith.
Oh, yeah.
What happened to that lovely number one from last week, Sam Smith and Kim Petras's Unholy? Where did that just disappear to?
Oh, it's number 11.
Okay. There we go.
It's funny.
Man,
like I was looking down the Hot 100 and I was counting everything that wasn't named Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see, I'm like, oh, would anyone have made the top 10 this week for the first time? It looks like that friend of the podcast, Bebe Rexha, and David Guetta would have been top 10 this week had it not been for Taylor Swift.
That's painful, Keith. I don't know if you needed to tell our friend Bebe that.
Well, anyone can look at the chart and kind of.
It could happen next week.
In theory, all those Taylor songs should subside.
I'm interested to see what happens with Unholy, too, because it's become a bit of a Halloween song. We're recording on Monday, Halloween, and it was on Spotify's Halloween party playlist that they curated. And it was on SNL this weekend, which was like the Halloween episode. I feel like Unholy like might have had a big Halloween boost, so we'll see where it ends up next week.
I don't see Unholy having like a long life through the Christmas season.
Once the Mariahs and the Brenda Lees start scooting into the top 10.
Yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't have like a sort of a festive holiday.
It does have a holiday kind of vibe to it. The holiday is Halloween, not Christmas.
Yeah.
Speaking of next week's charts, I'm very interested to see where this song we're going to talk about is going to end up because Rihanna made her much-awaited return to music on Friday with Lift Me Up from the soundtrack of the upcoming Marvel sequel, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. The arrival of the song was preceded by a series of cryptic billboards around New York and a teaser post on social media that included the forthcoming movie title Wakanda Forever on screen before highlighting that first R in the word forever. The R has really become Rihanna's calling card. I love that, like, just the letter R. Yeah. And people know it's Rihanna. But Lift Me Up was written as a tribute to late Black Panther star Chadwick Boseman, who died from colon cancer in 2020 at age 43. Nigerian singer Tems, Oscar-winning composer Ludwig Göransson, Rihanna herself, and Black Panther director Ryan Coogler all have writing credits on this track. So first of all, let's take a short listen to the song. All right, so Keith, my first talking point here is, what do we think about this, you know, being Rihanna's first solo song since she released her album Anti back in 2016? Like, what do we think about this as a solo reintroduction? Do you have thoughts?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. What are those thoughts?
Those thoughts are, I think you have to think of the song within the context of the film. Yeah. And it is a song that was written for a movie.
Yeah.
And what the song's explicit purpose is within the film. And we don't know exactly where it is in the movie, but if it's written as a tribute to Chadwick Boseman, I'm guessing that there's probably an emotional scene in this film that this song accompanies. And therefore, its lullaby aspect, I think, is probably warranted. And it is probably doing exactly what the song is supposed to do within the context of the film. So anyone that was hoping for, like, Rihanna dance floor banger, right, like, that's not what this is supposed
this
to
it.
Be. No.
And, you know, having said all that, that makes me think of See You Again, which Charlie Puth and Wiz Khalifa released from the Fast and the Furious franchise as a tribute to Paul. Why am I forgetting Paul's last name?
Walker.
Paul Walker, who passed away also in the midst of this film franchise. And it's those kinds of songs resonate with fans. Obviously, that was like a multi-week number one song. So because this is a ballad doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to do its thing on the charts or whatever. But I think that people are embracing this and realizing that it is it's supposed to be a ballad, a mournful song. I mean, we're talking about there's like harps in it. It's very emotional. It's not going to be like the Rihanna return that maybe fans expect at like Super Bowl halftime, but it is like a wonderful, I think it's a wonderful song that's being warmly received. I have to say the thing that stuck out to me the most listening to it was the tone and quality of her voice. Like, her voice is so powerful right off the bat. The first note she sings in the song, it's like it just cuts through. And she's one of those artists that I feel like when she first came out, I don't know that people thought of her as being like this, you know, vocal superstar. She wasn't like, you know, a Christina or a Mariah or something like
that.
That's
fair.
But I think hearing this song, you recognize the like special tonal quality that she brings that makes her so notable. You know, it's Rihanna right away. And the fact that she can, you know, move from a ballad to a dance floor banger to all these different things with her voice and be that kind of chameleon pop star. She is like a singular artist, and you can hear it right away in her vocal on this song. So if I'm a Rihanna fan, I'm thrilled just hearing this vocal because I think it's really strong and really good.
Yeah.
And I guess I don't know the answer to this. I went and looked up to see if we have a track list yet for the Wakanda Forever soundtrack. Could not find that. So I guess the next question is, you know, similar to like Kendrick on the original Black Panther soundtrack. Are we going to get more Rihanna songs maybe from the Wakanda Forever soundtrack? Do we know?
Has anyone from the production commented on the contents of the Wakanda Forever soundtrack album? Is it going to be a Rihanna curated thing?
I've not heard that Rihanna is going to fulfill that kind of Kendrick role where she was like, you know, EPing this or something. And actually, if anything, Thames is actually on multiple songs already from Black Panther. So she might be from Wakanda Forever. She might be more the like, you know, thread, the common thread among many songs, which makes sense. She's a Nigerian artist and these movies are in a fictional African country, so I like the idea that they, you know, led with Thames on this. But I just wonder if maybe, you know, if Rihanna was involved in this project, maybe she's involved in something more. I'm sort of fingers crossed for that. One more thing. When the Lift Me Up cover art came out, I'm not sure if you saw this, Keith, but a lot of fans were pointing out that the kind of simple photo of Rihanna's face and her hair sort of wavy and worn down, that she looked a little bit, I should say, worn down sounds not as not what I'm trying to say.
Literally down.
Her hair is down. It's not worn down.
Her worn out hair.
Right. I'm like, what did I just say about the beautiful Rihanna? It looked a lot like her first album cover that she put out. And so a lot of fans are kind of drawing these connections to maybe Rihanna's having a little bit of a return to the early days. The video for Lift Me Up is also just Rihanna on a beach, which kind of looks like early Rihanna music videos. And fans are sort of wondering if she's hinting at anything of like a return to like her island roots pop sort of thing.
But it's kind of a stretch.
It's a bit of a stretch because, as you said, this is a Black Panther song. This is not a Rihanna song. So she probably wasn't like, you know, controlling the narrative to like tell a story about her upcoming music. Right.
No.
Yeah.
No, it's like I would think you're like, this is not about me. This is about the film. This is about Chadwick. The message of the song.
Yeah.
It's about Chadwick. Yeah. And I'm not trying to distract from that. Let's make it a very simple, stripped down. It's, you know, a moment where it's not about uber glam.
Yep.
Rihanna and like a high gloss video that has like, you know, choreo or something.
Right.
I mean, that all would have been fine, but it's not appropriate for this particular song.
Yes.
But it is fun to see fans speculate, because fans, you know, would love music from Rihanna in any capacity.
Yeah. That. And so the next question is, you know, will we hear this song at the Super Bowl halftime? I feel like it's a probably not.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe. What if it turns into some huge number one multi-week moment that gets nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Song?
Yeah, all of a sudden. And the timing of all that would be the same time.
Like, why wouldn't you want to perform it on the Super Bowl, even if it's only like 20 seconds?
Yeah, like, you know? Lady Gaga would have done Shallow if her Super Bowl were before that, for sure.
Lady Gaga did what was the name
Reasons.
Of that? Million Reasons, yeah. Which is a ballad. I mean, it's more of a kind of a has a it's a little bit more up tempo because it has a big piano.
Current, that was her current song in the charts. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, we also don't know what will happen between now and January. Maybe Rihanna drops a big surprise album or something.
Well, there's the final question, Keith. Will we get an album or a non soundtrack song perhaps from Rihanna before February?
I don't know. What do you think, Katie?
I hope so. I kind of feel like it could be a Beyonce situation, not when Beyonce headlined, but when she showed up for the Coldplay halftime and did Formation. And that, I don't know that people recognize that song came out like less than 2 days before she performed it at the Super Bowl. And it, like, she created a cultural moment on the spot. It was just like it all happened at once. And typically people think, oh, you only do the hits, you know, at Super Bowl. But she actually, like, she just willed that into becoming a thing by, like, by dropping it when she did and by performing it right away on the Super Bowl. So Rihanna has that kind of power. She can create a cultural moment at the drop of a dime. Maybe she'll choose to do something like that.
Perform something that maybe we haven't heard at all before on the Super Bowl.
Exactly. Maybe Calvin Harris is involved. Who knows?
Sure. Maybe Taylor Swift co-wrote it, too. Who knows?
Who knows? Okay, this is all wishful thinking. But we are very excited for Rihanna to be back in any way, shape or form. And I am crossing my fingers about maybe another taste of Rihanna from the Wakanda Forever soundtrack. And of course, we'll tell you all about it on the Pop Shop if it happens.
And now it's time for the chart stat of the week.
The lift is up where we belong, where the eagles cry.
40 years ago, a single that would go on to win the Academy Award for Best Original Song topped the Hot 100 as Up Where We Belong from the film An Officer and a Gentleman by Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes rose 5-1 on the Hot 100 dated November 6th, 1982. The track would spend 3 weeks atop the list and mark the first number one for both Cocker and Warnes. Up Where We Belong was written by Jack Nitzsche, Buffy St. Marie, and Will Jennings, who all won the Oscar the following year for penning the track. It was the only Oscar win for Nitzsche and St. Marie, but Jennings would later win a second Oscar for co-writing My Heart Will Go On from the film Titanic, alongside James Horner, and of course, My Heart Will Go On, as recorded by Celine Dion, hit number one on the Hot 100. But back to Cocker and Warnes. Cocker debuted on the Hot 100 in 1968 with the song With a Little Help from My Friends, which would later serve as the theme song to the TV series The Wonder Years in the 1980s.
This is me learning that song was recorded in 1968, or released. I just always assumed that Joe Cocker put that out in the 80s, like when the Wonder Years came out.
I mean, maybe there was like a re-recorded version or
That's
something,
wild.
But I mean, it's the song that, I mean, I think most people of a certain generation associate that song with the Wonder Years more than anything else. Up Where We Belong was the only Hot 100 number one for Cocker, who died in 2014. As for Jennifer Warnes, she topped the Hot 100 a second time with another movie song in 1987. That year, she and Bill Medley took their duet from the film Dirty Dancing to number one for 1 week. I've Had the Time of My Life. The track would also go on to win the Oscar for Best Original Song. Clearly, Warnes had a nice track record for number one hits from movies that later won an Oscar in the 1980s, considering her only two number ones were also both Oscar-winning songs. Yeah. So there you have it. 40 years ago, Up Where We Belong hit number one on the Hot 100 on its way to an Academy Award win for Best Original Song.
I did want to say that as a huge Beatles fan, I have to say that Joe Cocker's With a Little Help, My Friends is like the one and only example I have of like a person improving on a Beatles song. Like, I love the Beatles and I love Ringo. He sings that one originally. But the Joe Cocker version to me is the best.
So we should go out on that because we haven't heard it yet.
I think we should.
Okay, we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.